Life's good.
Never on.
Whoa.
Hard. Hard reset.
Come on, Brent.
Life's good.
Got real close.
The hair high, right?
Trying to hit two thirds.
Have they saved it for her? Yes, they have.
Welcome to Game of Stones, everybody. I am Sean Graham Scott, alongside, as always. Hello, Scott.
Sean, what's happening, bud?
My camera just went out. That's what's happening.
Something's wrong with your camera. You've been trying to delay, I think, this buying a new camera for a long time.
I have.
And it might be the time. But
yeah,
I guess we don't really need to see each other.
No, I mean, I should have it working for other professional purposes.
True.
But yeah, I've been putting it off. Maybe I got some time this weekend and I live near a Best Buy.
Ah, yes. So that's good.
Maybe that'll be the occasion. Scott, I see you're pouring something over there. What do you got?
I got a beer. It's the Sunlight from Dominion City.
Yeah.
The lighter version of their Sunsplit recipe. Clocking in at just 4.5% ABV, perfect for a nice weeknight podcast recording session.
Yes, I agree. It is been a busy time. We talked last week about all the goings on over in Cortina for the Olympics. We talked about the mixed doubles, which was in the books, and the big controversy with Mark Kennedy and Oscar Erickson. And now, of course, we do have resolution to the 2026 Winter Olympic Games. That's where we'll start. We will do a Briar preview, and I will timestamp that down below if that's what you want to listen to and you want to jump right to our Briar preview. We'll talk about all 18 teams in the field. But before we do that, Scott, let's talk about the Winter Olympic Games. Let's take them in the order in which they happened. So let's start with the women. And we have Anna Hasselberg wins her second gold medal of her career, beats Silvana Tiranzoni in that gold medal game. Rachel Homan takes the bronze, beating Tabitha Peterson and the United States in the bronze medal match. Scott, though, let's start with the champions, the Swedish side. This is remarkable to me that they've never won a world championship and now have two Olympic gold medals, tying their fellow Swede Annette Norberg as the most successful women's skip in the Olympics. That's Anna, of course, and the rest of the team now with two. Scott, I kind of zoomed through the gold medal game on the replay because I don't care who was playing in it. I don't think I was getting up at 5 to watch it, especially when I did a pretty good job of throughout the course of the week. If I wanted to watch on Gem later, like Gem doesn't tip you as to what the score is at any point. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't proactively go look, I didn't really get a lot of like push notifications, anything like that. So I did an okay job avoiding scores. I did watch that one though, knowing what the score wasn't the greatest game. And Anna Hasselberg had a pretty easy shot on her last in the 10th to win. But it also was a game that didn't have that many misses. Like it was a clean, kind of straightforward game. It almost reminded me of a slightly more exciting Scotties final that we had this year between Anderson and Laws. That was not too much was going on. The ends weren't overly complicated, but everything was pretty clean.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way of putting it. I thought Team Switzerland were a bit tentative and didn't really sort of put the hammer down early. And like you said, they were just kind of trading blows back and forth. And the team with the hammer in the last end had a pretty easy shot to win, like you said. So some pretty good double peels in that last end. Just going to look. Double takeout. Yeah. Some double peels by Agnes Nockenhauer.
Agnes Nockenhauer was the MVP. Certainly late in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Hasselberg had to make her shots, but they were made all that much easier because of the play in front of her. So not a huge stressful 10th end, I'd say. I mean, from my perspective. Same thing for me, Sean. I didn't watch live at 5 a.m. But when I did, and I didn't know the score when I opened the Gem app at the first intermission of the men's hockey game. Mm-hmm. But the photo that CBC Gem had in the thumbnail was of Team Sweden. And I thought, oh, does that mean they win?
Bit of a tip off, yeah.
Bit of a tip off there, but that's okay, right? Yeah. So that was my impression of the final. Sean, I will say I used inefficient curling betting markets to make sure that I was winning money either way on this game.
Okay.
And I bet Sweden before the event at +650 to win.
Okay.
Which, if you think about it, is pretty wild. I know Rachel Holman is the best team in the world, and we'll talk about them. And I still think that. Mm-hmm. But like, Sweden and Switzerland are both very, very, very good too. So little market inefficiencies there. Maybe we can talk to our buddy Matt about those kinds of things later on in the summer.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy that you got them at 6.5 to 1. That's kind of nuts. Right? I agree. Yeah. And that game too, I should note that game really turns in the eighth end where Sweden's up 1 and you get a steal. And if memory serves, Switzerland was set up somewhat well for a deuce and Alina just missed one. And you get the steal there, and that kind of shifted the game. If there's a deuce there for Switzerland, they're up 1 in 9 and yeah, Sweden has the hammer and probably going to look for a blank and see what they could do. But it makes the game more interesting in a scenario where you don't have that steal in the eighth. But yeah, definitely, you're right. The game turned there.
Yeah, that was a double, and she hit it a bit too thick, the one that went back. Yeah, and it didn't roll far enough.
Yeah.
So it rolled, but it was just like full 12 foot, and her two rocks, one was biting and one was just barely in the 12 foot.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the big mistake. And like you said, the turning point after which they really needed to press to try and get two there in the ninth, which they managed to do. But that just meant Hasselberg had the hammer coming home.
Yeah. So Scott, with the two gold medals and kind of, as you think about, we don't know what Anna Hasselberg is going to do, but she's a two-time Olympic gold medalist, as noted earlier and every year on the Bold Predictions podcast. She has not won a world championship. She will not play this year. It will be Isabella Rana and her team that will be going for Sweden to the Women's World Curling Championship. So as we look at her career as it sits right now here, February 2026, I mean, Annette Nordberg did win a world championship. But when you think of the greatest players in the sport's history in the Olympic era, let's focus on the Olympic era. Certainly the Olympics significantly sways how we feel about players and legacy, but the world championship still matters. And when we think about Anna Hasselberg and her place in sort of the pantheon of curling right now, how important is that world championship at this point? Or can we just say two gold medalists? I do think her career and resume is somewhat unassailable as obviously a very high quality, great all-time player, but does she need that to kind of cement some sort of a place in like the, as like within the discussions of top three, four of all time?
I don't think so, Sean. There's like a lot of podiums in there. It's not like she went to the world championships and was out of the playoff contention
right
all the time, right? It's not a fluke that she's won two Olympic golds, a lot of European championships as well.
Yep.
A lot of Grand Slams too. Mm-hmm. I think since the introduction of curling to the Olympics and the Olympic competition being what the athletes consider the pinnacle of the sport, I think that's what matters the most for them. And so if that's what the athletes think, who am I to say, no, that's you need to win a world championship. I feel like Bill Simmons always talks about counting titles, right? Oh, he's got this many titles, this much, whatever. Like, I don't know. They're a great team. Nobody's going to convince me they're not. And Hasselberg herself being in the position to throw those clutch rocks in the biggest event of the sport, which is the curling. And I think that's, like I said, pretty well agreed upon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's definitely in the conversation.
Now, on the other side, we have Svetlana Tyrannzoni, who has won 4 world championships. And this was her first Olympic medal. So the silver medal for her, a lot of speculation about what she might do this quad, if she's going to hang it up and move on to new pursuits. But similarly, Scott, if we think about Svetlana Tyrannzoni's career, does not having an Olympic gold medal do anything in terms of her legacy as one of the all-time greats?
I think having a medal is enough for her. 4 times, like 4 time back-to-back-to-back-to-back world champions. Hmm. Is that right?
Or was it was 4 in a row.
There was one year where they didn't have it in 2020, but she won 2019, 2021, 2022, and 2023.
Let me fact check that.
And then Holman's won the last 2. So yeah, I mean, their team too is unassailably great. Not having an Olympic medal at all is a bit surprising until this event, right? Like, you would have thought, oh, they would have done better. But 2022 was kind of weird, where Eve Muirhead came in 5-4 and stormed her way to that gold medal. And then Switzerland couldn't hang on in the bronze medal game, I think against Hasselberg. Maybe I'm wrong. But I don't think there's any damage to her legacy having not won an Olympic gold medal. Silver medal is pretty hard to do. Just ask Mike Harris, Cheryl Bernard, any number of teams that have won silver medals. So no, I don't think that tarnishes the legacy at all.
Yeah. And Scott, you were right. It was Anna Hasselberg 2022 that she lost to in the bronze medal game. And you are also correct. 2019, 2021, 2022, 2023 world championship. Should note too that they also were in the final of the last 2 in 2024 and 2025 against Rachel Holman. So they have played in 6 consecutive world championship finals.
Yeah. Like, come on. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Now, it should be noted, they're playing the Swiss championships right now. So see if they make it, as if they win Switzerland and be back at the world championship of the Swiss reps. That is curious timing by Switzerland.
That's tough. That's tough.
To make them go do that. So yeah, but definitely congratulations to them. And you're right, getting that medal, getting that part of the career checked off, I think it's really important for them and their legacy. So congratulations to Svetlana Tyrannzoni. She is 46, so she'll be 50 by the time we get to France in 2030. But as Molly Shannon taught us on SNL all those years ago, Scott, like, I'm 50 and I can do whatever I want, or whatever that character did. And was it 50?
I kick, I punch, and I kick. I'm 50. Of course.
So there you have that bronze medal game. As mentioned, Rachel Holman beats Tabitha Peterson in the bronze medal match to get on the podium. First Olympic medal for Rachel Holman as well in her 3rd trip, second in the 4-person game. Of course, 2022 in the mixed doubles. 10-7 was the final of that game in the bronze. I felt like, I mean, it comes out, Peterson has the hammer, they get forced in the first end, and then the team's forced back and forth, and then Holman cracks a 3 in the 6th, And I really felt, Scott, that in the first half of that game, the team with the hammer, I think in both cases, was chasing a little bit. And Tabitha Peterson made a couple really good ones to save ends, as did Rachel Holman. So I think it was a really well-played game overall. But Holman gets the 3 and the 6, 3 and the 8 as well. And that kind of put the game out of reach a little bit. She's playing 10 up one with the hammer. And, you know, things were in pretty good shape there. But they get through. They get on the podium. For me, though, for Rachel Holman, the thing I might remember the most about this event for them was when she beat Korea on Thursday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And she makes her final shot. And it kind of reminded me of last year when Rory McIlroy won the Masters, where the reaction wasn't necessarily joy or happiness. It really just seemed like relief. Like, mm-hmm. this thing that has been weighing me down is gone now. That's kind of what it looked like. Because when Rachel wins a big game, she will smile and like pump her fist. But this one seemed more like her shoulders went down a bit and was like, oh, good, that's done.
Like,
it was kind of my take on it.
Yeah, for sure. And I like that game against Korea, they got a little bit closer than they probably needed it to be.
Yes.
Getting a little cute. I think they missed in the 9th, right? They could have had an extra point and missed it, but maybe I'm not remembering, but yeah, like that was a huge exhale. There was tears, right? I saw tears. Like, it was very important for her to get into the playoff round, and their start to the event was, I would say, shocking. It was shocking to me that they lost 3 games in a row, which they had never done. Never. They've right. never lost 3 games in a row with these 4 women on the team.
Yeah.
They've only lost 2 in a row, like once or twice. So, and to lose to the teams that they did lose to, like,
yeah, like, respectfully, I mean, they should beat Tabitha Peterson more often than not at this point in both those skips and teams' career. And same with Sophie Jackson.
And so to then be going into the game against Tirinzoni, having already dropped those two, and they played well enough to beat Tirinzoni and sort of gave it away in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It went to the extra. I think they had a shot they didn't have a shot in 10 to win.
No, but they were up 4-0 after 3. And then it was the 7th end and things just go haywire and they give up a 4, which they had done earlier to Sophie Jack. Like they were just, or to Tabitha Peterson, they gave it before as well. Like, they were just doing things that you don't normally see. And they talked about this on the broadcast a lot. Bruce Rennie would say over the weekend, he was talking about during that time, I think people might've been thinking, and they might've been thinking, or at least Rachel, like, how is this happening again?
Yeah.
How is it going off the rails again?
Yeah.
And for someone that good.
And I think we talked about before the event that if they have trouble reading the ice, like if the ice is tricky, then Rachel can sometimes lose her confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And when she loses her confidence, it's really bad for the team as a whole. And so that kind of cascades downward. And they had a really tough time putting the broom in the right position. Because if this team is putting the broom in the right spot, they know they're going to make shots.
Mm-hmm.
But that when the questions creep in and they have to start to change the way they throw to make sure that they get it straight enough or get a little more curl, that's when there's more variables in the equation. And when there's more variables, there's more chances for things to go off the rail, like in that 7th end, as you talked about.
Yeah.
To their credit though, right? They had a day off the next day. Maybe Rachel went on a John Schuster walk. I don't know. But they came out corrected after that. And when she made, well, let's talk about the shot that she made that Emma talked her into. Because that was probably, for me, the turning point where we said, okay, this is Team Holman.
Yeah, so we alluded to this last week. We didn't talk about it in too much detail. It was the shot that she played. I'm trying to pull up the game here. Constantini. It was against Constantini. Italy.
Yes.
Yeah, Constantini, ninth end. And she makes a triple, and that sets up the two. Now she gives up, giving up a 3-10.
Yeah.
And then they almost lose the draw in 11. They almost lost at the end of the shot, but they won the game. But that, and I think we talked about it last week, but that's the sort of shot that, or the type of interaction that you only have when you know each other for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Emma Miskiw talked Rachel Holman into that shot, like I don't think Tracy or Sarah could talk her into that shot. Like it was Emma knowing what to say, knowing that Rachel can make it, and also knowing that when Rachel is maybe doubting the ice or the reaction of the rocks or the angles or whatever, knowing what to say and having the trust back and forth that we have 30 years of history here, like you can trust me on this one. And that's kind of what came across in that shot. And yeah, I think Emma Miskiw was the MVP of navigating those middle games for sure.
Yeah, and like it was so great when you talked about it, about like you can make this shot, just do it, just make it, just be good. Yeah. And we've said this a lot about this team. They're so good. Like just go be good and you'll win the most of your games, and they have, right? Sort of just believe in it. And it's, you know, not very fair of me to say that they don't, because they obviously have won back-to-back world championships without losing a game, and or back-to-back Scotties without losing a game, and so they're great.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you're not feeling it, you just have to be reminded, and you're right, the only person that can do that is the person that's been playing with you for 30 years.
Yeah.
Because you'll believe them.
Yep. So congratulations to Canada and Rachel Holman. Regrets to Dalal. She's got to change the sign again. but hey, you know, that's the price of doing business when we get to this sort of thing.
I saw the flags outside the club on Monday night, Sean, and I was like, yeah, right.
Yeah,
on.
I did see some photos from, there's a group of folks from the Ottawa Curling Club who went down to greet Emma as she returns to Ottawa. Saw a clip on that from CTV Ottawa. So it seemed like a pretty good crowd there. We, of course, were not there, Scott, because we were playing ourselves.
We couldn't make the trek because of our own game, but glad to see that there was a good contingent on hand to welcome her home.
Yeah. So elsewhere, the other playoff team was Tabitha Peterson and the United States, 6-3 over the course of the week, which was good for second place. It was kind of interesting, Scott, that last game of the women's round robin, she played, Tabitha Peterson played Silvana Tiranzoni and Switzerland, and they won that game. And that's what got the United States into the playoffs. If they had lost, Sophie Jackson, Sophie Jackson had won, would have gotten in to the playoffs. And that game went to an extra end. Tiranzoni and Switzerland get, I can't remember, 2 or 3 in the 10th end to take it to the extra. I think it was a 3. And then Tabitha Peterson plays an end that has more rocks than you would have anticipated in an extra end, but makes the key shot, makes a key draw to win the game. They get in. Good story for USA Curling. Good story for them as a team. They, of course, had to go through the last chance qualifier in Kelowna late last year. They come in, have a really good week. And when we look around at women's curling in the United States and say, like, who's the next team? I think that's development-wise, I think we're still waiting for that team to emerge in the same way that we've seen on the men's side. A couple teams have come up and are now there, with John Schuster potentially on his way out, or at least in probably the back nine of his career. The women's game, we haven't quite seen that depth as yet, but maybe this performance, getting a lot of eyeballs on it, maybe this will help restart that process for USA Women's Curling.
Yeah, I think so. They have to be really proud of their week. And like you said, clutch shot to win there. What I took away from that last game was how angry Alina Patz seemed to be that they lost.
Yeah.
But like you mentioned, Sean, if they had won and everything had shaken out the same way, Switzerland would have played Canada in the semifinal.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine they would have been that happy with it, as opposed to a rematch against the US team with that fire in their belly. So,
yeah,
you know, a little, what do they call sliding doors moment there. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I think for a team like the US to have to go through that last chance qualifier, come in, have a really good event, beat teams like beat Rachel Holman, beat Silvana Tirinzoni. Yeah, I think these women have shown that USA curling is serious, and hopefully inspired some more young curlers at home along the way, and that we see that program continue to build on this success and not let it drop off before and just sort of have to pick it up before the next Olympics in 2030. Yes.
Absolutely. So congratulations to them. Elsewhere in the women's draw, it was South Korea. They just missed. That was essentially a playoff game. It was like a quarterfinal against Canada and Gimunji. They lose. They finish 5-4. Great Britain, Sophie Jackson, also 5-4. Madelena DuPont, 4-5. And then a three-way tie for the eighth position between Japan and Sayaka Yoshimura, Italy, Stefania Constantini, and China Wang Rui. So there it is on the women's side. Scott, let's talk about the men's playoffs here. And it was Canada and Brad Jacobs winning the gold medal. They beat Bruce Mowat and Great Britain in the final. It was a very well-played gold medal game between Canada and Great Britain, in which Canada wins 9-6. That score, I think, belies how close it was. It was a steal in the 10th end for Brad Jacobs. Bruce Mowat might have had a shot to tie it. I think he did, and I think if he had had a little more time, to throw it, maybe he makes it. But it was a three in the 9th end from Canada. That changes the game. That is the big shift there. You got single peels by Bobby Lammy and Grant Hardy. They don't make the double peels that they were hoping for, and that creates a setup whereby Canada and Brad Jacobs can get the three there and bust the game open. So congratulations to Team Canada. Two gold medals now for Brad Jacobs, Mark Kennedy, and Ben Hebert. Mark Kennedy also has the bronze medal from 2022. He was the alternate on that 2022 squad. So a pretty good career for Mark Kennedy in his four Olympic appearances. Scott, what is your takeaway from Canada's first Olympic gold medal in four-person curling since Brad Jacobs?
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that, because I don't remember which game was first, whether Jennifer Jones was first in 2014 or Brad Jacobs, in terms of who won their game first? Because it could be the first since Jennifer Jones.
Well, we'll say the first men's since 2014, Brad Jacobs. I think the two teams who we thought were the best two going in are the ones that made the final. And, you know, there were a lot of permutations that could have happened. At the end, there was maybe some opportunities to let's invoke the NBA and tank to ensure some playoff matchups wouldn't happen. But we got the two best teams in the world in the final. And I think that the game that resulted from it was very worthy of that matchup. Like you said, both teams were really, really good. In the 9th end, how things set up, just a couple of misses here and there. Like Bobby had some troubles and the Canadians kept their rocks spread apart. And then, yeah, another double opportunity by Grant that missed and gave the Canadians the opportunity to spread the rocks out. And there you go. Easy three, right? Mm-hmm. The precision with which these teams play is extraordinary to watch. And the roles that Team GB are able to make, like when they throw that like board weight, the best of any team in the world, I think, and control it with the sweeping. And they can really just make that rock do whatever they want. So I was really impressed by their play all day. And then those tiny little mistakes in nine is ultimately the game, right? And like you said, they did run out of time and didn't have a lot of time to consult on their last shot. I'm not sure it was there, but I was driving at the time, so I wasn't really looking at the screen.
Good.
I was getting it described to me. So looking at it now on the World Curling site, yeah.
It was close.
It was close, but ultimately it was really hard to stick the shooter with how like front, how in front of lined up vertically, I'll say, the two stones were.
Yeah.
You could make them go easy, but you probably couldn't hold the shooter. And
yeah, the sure double enough, was easy. Yeah. Making the double was easy. Holding the shooter, that was the challenge for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So obviously really fun game. Two best teams, and I think Bruce will be happy to get a silver, but
yeah.
Upset that he didn't capitalize when he could have.
Yeah. Well, actually, so you use an interesting word there, Scott, because one of the things I wrote down here, you said that was a fun game. Was it fun? Like, I got the impression that nobody was having fun.
Like, well,
it was so intense. Like, and not only the guys on the ice, like Jennifer Jones was like, seemed nervous and into it. Like, it just seemed like, you know, sports is supposed to be entertaining, right? And the shot making was incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely world class. And I didn't really, I don't have a stake in who wins. I mean, my life is going to go on, whether it's Canada or Great Britain, who wins. So I don't really have a stake in it. And I was entertained by it, but I was watching it thinking, is anybody having fun here? Like, even the crowd seemed nervous. Like, everyone just seemed so tense.
I think, I think as somebody who likes watching curling, it was a great game. I think a contender for game of the year when we get to that.
But was it fun? That's different.
I think it was fun. It was fun to watch. It was fun to watch them make all these precise shots. And I remember thinking like, holy cow, what do they got to do? Right. Everybody's just making shot after shot after shot. So I had fun watching it.
Okay. Yeah, it was very entertaining. No question about it. You mentioned Bruce Mowat, of course, silver medal. They got the silver medal last time as well, losing to Nicodine in the final. Watching the medal ceremony, Scott, something occurred to me because they came out and Hammy McMillan and Grant Hardy had clearly been crying in the locker room and were barely able to keep it together on the podium. And I got me thinking, and you were there, so you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but my memory is that in Vancouver, they might have done a thing in the arena right after games and given people medals, but they had another one in the central area, what near BC Place or whatever, where there was like another ceremony. Maybe that's where they got the actual medals, and the ceremony in the venue was the plushie or whatever.
Most of the medals were given out in BC Place, but the curling medals were given out at the venue.
Okay.
Right after the event.
Okay. I like the other model better. because winning a silver medal is something to be incredibly proud of. And I know both Silvana Tiranzoni and Bruce Mount and their teams are proud of winning gold medals. Silver medal. In the moment, you are crushed.
Yeah.
And okay, if you're a cross-country skier and you finish second, you're like, okay, all right, second place, finish the race, you look up, second place, like, this is good for me, like, great. Or like, you're doing the half pipe or whatever and you get silver, you're probably half excited that you got silver, half excited that you're still in one piece. And then, you know, like, so those ceremonies, people are smiling when they get their silver medals. In events that are tournaments where it's a gold medal match, I don't know, has there ever been a good photo of the silver medal winning team? Like, they just look so, like, give them an hour.
Yeah.
Let them have like some time to sit with it, reflect, and hopefully when they come get their gold medal, they're happy about having that, as opposed to the immediate crush of losing that game. I just felt so bad for both teams, but the British guys were more outwardly emotional about it, or visibly emotional about it. That it was kind of hard to watch, and just because you feel so bad for them, because you know how much they put into it, and from all accounts, they're really good dudes as well. So like, you just, you could feel how crushed they were, and in this moment, that for an athlete should be a really positive, happy memory of achieving this goal of an Olympic medal. And you get the photo and
yeah.
I don't know, you're putting that on your mantle. I don't know.
You're right. Cause in these team sports, you don't really win the silver medal. You lose the gold medal.
You lose the last game. Yeah. I think you win the silver because you have to win your way there. You have so much to do to get into that game that you've still won something.
Yeah. But then all the other medalists have won their last game.
Correct.
So do you ever do something where, okay, there's four teams and the team that was in first sort of waits till the very end. So team number four plays team number three and you like rack it up, or I don't know. I'll go to the drawing board for a summer episode to design a better Olympic curling tournament. But
I have no problem with the format. Just give me some time.
Yeah, honestly, I don't really like the format semifinals into final. Like, because that semifinal is the most nerve-wracking game of the event, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Anyway, I'll think about it.
Bronze medal side, congratulations to Switzerland and Yannick Schwaller. They won the most games out of any team, men's or women's, at the Olympic Games, and they come away with the bronze medal. They lost the wrong one to Bruce Mowat in the semifinal, as you said, Scott, the most stressful game, and they beat Magnus Ramsfeld in the final. I think, though, when you look at their week, very curious set of scenarios in that last draw, the Thursday morning draw for the men, where Switzerland was playing Italy and Joel Reiternaz. Bruce Mowat was not playing. And if either, if both Italy and Norway had won, then Bruce Mowat doesn't make the playoffs. Ben Hebert needed a break. Or they gave Ben Hebert a break Thursday morning. Yeah. Not unfounded. Like, he sweeps a lot, like lots of energy expended. Like, I get it. Like, I'm not calling shenanigans on it. Like, it's a absolutely 100% reasonable, justifiable decision to make. But Tyler Tardy's not as good of a lead as Ben Hebert is. Norway wins. From all accounts, Magnus Ramsfeld was phenomenal in that game as well. Switzerland goes out. They're going to be in first place no matter what. And they beat Joel Reiternaz. And their reward for doing so and finishing 9-0 is the number one ranked team in the world and the defending world champion. Scott, I'm not saying they should have thrown the game.
Aren't you?
You could make a case
that they would have been in a better position to win a gold medal had they thrown the game. That's not the Olympic spirit. That's not the sporting spirit. But you could make the case.
You can definitely make the case, Sean. This is crazy. Like, Adam Silver would love for this situation to be happening, right, in the NBA, where we're not tanking a game. We're going to play our best.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you have to go out and play the best team in the world and lose to them and lose your chance to win a gold medal in doing so. And, of course, in curling, Sean, it's very hard to tank a game. And I'm looking at the Norway-Canada stats. Like, Tyler Tardy threw 83% at lead. Like, he wasn't putting guards in the house or like throwing them through or anything. Like,
no, they didn't tank. They didn't tank the game.
They didn't tank the game, but they were okay not winning the game.
Right.
Right. So they knew they were going to finish number two no matter what. And like, to be honest, it's probably, well, do you think it's a sweeter victory for the Canadians having done it against Bruce Mallett? I would argue they'd take their gold medal no matter who they played.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe knowing that you beat the number one team in the world is a little better, but maybe not.
I either go the medal's the same, right? They hand out the same medals no matter who you play.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's that's maybe where there's a potential issue with the format, but I don't know. I mean, tough break for those guys. They had such a good week.
Such a good week, yeah.
9-1 in the bronze medal game. So they do come away with a medal. Well-deserved for them. So congratulations to them. And a great week for Magnus Ramsfeld as well. He gets in to the playoffs 5-4. That win against Canada, huge for him, obviously, to make the playoffs. Loses to Brad Jacobs in the semifinal, then loses to Switzerland in the bronze medal game. Gave us a spinorama, though, on his last shot. So good way to go out on the Olympics, but a great week for them. And then everybody else through the field, the United States, Danny Casper, 4-5 for them, along with Italy, Joel Ray Ternaz, Mark Moskatowicz, also 4-5. A good week for Lucas Klima and his guys, 3-6. And then China and Zhu Xiaoming at 2-7. And surprisingly, Nikodin also 2-7 on the week for him.
Yeah, Nikodin, I think that's the one that stands out. They did beat China, so they finished technically in 9th place. But they had the gauntlet right out of the gate. And that first game against Italy, we talked about it in the preview, I think, right? The Italian team playing on home ice, having the crowd behind them for that first game. It was going to be a big one for Sweden because then they played GB and Canada right away. We talked a bit about the Canada game last week. We don't need to rehash any of that, but 0-3 after that. And really just behind the eight ball, right? Mm-hmm. They lost to Czechia in that last game after sort of all was lost, which put Czechia into eighth. But real tough week for Nicholas Adin and their team. And we'll see what's going to happen with them now that the quad is done.
Yeah, especially with Nick Adin and his health issues over the years. Those lower body injuries can certainly add up when you're talking about curling. So see what comes over the next quad. Scott, there was, of course, a lot of talk over the course of the week about what happened with Mark Kennedy. We rehashed all of it, or rehashed it all last week. But I did take note of Brad Jacobs' comments after the gold medal game. And Scott, I can't remember when this was, but it was within the last year or two, and I'll link to it with a time mark. We talked about what team could have a heel turn and really pull it off. And maybe this was after Brad Jacobs and the guys, they got booed out in St. John's during one of the Grand Slams, where they, I think, were up one with the hammer in the seventh, and gave up an easy steal instead of taking one because they didn't want to give Gushue the hammer back. They were better tied. They felt they were better tied with than up two without. And the very knowledgeable curling fans booed them because they thought that was bad for Gushue. And they kind of hammed up and they enjoyed it. We talked about what team would be a really good heel turn. And of course, what happened with Kennedy, there was strong reactions to it. I happened to turn on the semifinal early because of the snowstorm in Cortina. They start everything late, but I didn't realize that. So I threw on Gem at 10 after 1 or whatever it was and just waited. And during the intros of the semifinal, you know, as they introduce each individual player, it was like Ben Hebert, polite clap. Brett Gallant, polite clap. Mark Kennedy, boo. Yeah. And they all, the guys all kind of laugh about it or laughed about it. Yeah. And I thought, okay, like, I think we were right. These guys could be good heels. And I want to preface what I'm going to say is being a really good heel is hard. It takes skill and it takes talent. It's not just being a jerk, right? That's cheap heat. You got to get good quality heat. Okay. So after the gold medal game, Brad Jacobs, this is his quote in the post-game news conference. For anyone who called us cheaters, for anyone who said negative things about Mark Kennedy, about us, about Canada, about our families, I hope that the image of us standing on top of the podium, embracing one another, smiling ear to ear with our gold medals is burned into your brain forever. That is a great heel quote.
Legendary.
It is great. And it reminded me of this quote, Scott. Famously, Hulk Hogan. In 1996, turned heel at Bash of the Beach. And in his interview with me and Gene Okerlund in the ring, fans are throwing things into the ring as he's doing this promo. And Gene Okerlund, as he's talking, says, look at all this crap in the ring. And this is what you've done. And Hulk Hogan says, as far as I'm concerned, all of this crap in the ring represents these fans out here. For 2 years, brother, for 2 years, I held my head high. I did everything for the charities. I did everything for the kids. And the reception I got when I came out here, you fans can stick it, brother. Like, obviously what Brad Jacobs said is not that. But it's not that far off either. Like, it is a brilliant, like, stick it in your eye kind of heel promo. And the thing about a really good heel is there's a grain of truth in what they say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can see their perspective where they're coming from. And you might not always necessarily agree with it, but you can see that there's like some truth in what they say. And what he says, yeah, people going after them as people and certainly going after the families is totally offside and they have every right to be angry with that. And so I get where he's coming from. And I don't know, it just made me... That quote just reminded me of a great professional wrestling heel promo.
Yeah. I echo everything that you say. You're more of a wrestling guy than me, so you get it more. But yeah, pretty remarkable. And if they can pull this off, like, we'll see. We're going to talk about the Briar in a sec. We'll see the reception they get at the Briar, and especially from the Newfoundland fans, and when they get into that Brad Gushue matchup. So
yeah,
that'll be really fun.
Yeah. And if it comes to pass that they win the Briar, the world championship is in the United States. So that would be an interesting crowd reaction in the United States, potentially. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, and I saw an interview with Brad Jacobs yesterday on CTV. It was recorded Monday. He was in the airport. He was in Pearson waiting for his connecting flight back to the Sioux. And he was asked about what happened with Sweden. And he talked about how he didn't like it, how it felt premeditated. And he finished it by saying, I think at the end of the day, we got what we deserved and they got what they deserved. So
it's a long time coming.
There you go. So, you know, little bit of tension there. See what happens at the Rock League.
Yeah.
And they all gather together. You know, too bad Gene Okerlund is no longer with us to
mean Gene
to be the arbiter of this. So there you go, Scott. Anything else from the Olympic Games that you want to talk about?
I think we hit everything, Sean. I think we did.
All right. So with that, we'll put a pin in the 2026 Winter Olympic Games. I'm sure we'll talk about it again as we go through the spring. Maybe we'll do a summer episode, really sort of long-term takeaways from the games, especially once we have the new lineups and all that. So with that, we'll turn our attention to St. John's, Newfoundland and Labrador for the 2026 Montana's Brier. 18 teams in the field. This is the same format as the Scotties Tournament of Hearts. There are, as I said, 18 teams. 6,100 fans can fit into the Mary Browns Center, and those seats will be very full during the Pool A games because both Newfoundland and Labrador teams are there. Of course, we'll talk about them. Purse of $300,000, $100,000 for the winner, $60,000 for second place, $40,000 for third, $20,000 for fourth. Your other two playoff teams got $12,500, 7 through 10, $6,500, $4,500, 11 through 14, and you get $2,500 just for showing up at the Brier. There are two pools. Pool A has Team Canada, Brad Jacobs, Newfoundland, Labrador, Gushu, Ontario, Saskatchewan, Kelly Knapp, Team Quebec, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, Newfoundland, Nathan Young, and Nunavut. Pool B is Manitoba, Matt Dunstone, Saskatchewan, Mike McEwen, Alberta, Manitoba, Braden Calvert, New Brunswick, British Columbia, Northern Ontario, Yukon, and Northwest Territory. Scott, is one pool better than the other?
I don't think so. I think they're pretty balanced.
What do you think? I think Pool A is stronger. And it kind of depends on Jaden King and Tyler Smith. Right? Like Tyler Smith, we'll talk about it, but Tyler Smith has had a really good Brier before, not last year, but he has had a good one. Jaden King, we think will be good long-term. First time is always tough. Kelly Knapp coming back for the second time, we'll see for him. And then, of course, you got a world champion there in Jean-Michel Menard to go along with Brad Jacobs and Brad Gushu. So I think that one has maybe a little more depth at the bottom half. Whereas when you look at BC, Northern Ontario, Yukon, Nunavut, Northwest Territories and Pool B, especially with BC and Northern Ontario with rookie skips. I think, and Manitoba, Braden Calvert, his first time as well. I think you just have a little stronger up and down, top to bottom in Pool A.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think the heavy hitters at the top are pretty equal. But Kevin Cooey did have a very good play downs. But yeah, happy to dive in, talk about the teams.
All right, Scott, of course, our question we ask all the time in these events, how many teams can win?
I'm going to say four.
Okay, who you got?
Jacobs, Dunstone, Gushu, and McEwen.
Yeah, I think that's who I would have too. And you could even talk me into three, depending on the condition of the Jacobs team when they get there.
Yeah, like I would be pretty surprised if anybody else won, to be honest.
Yeah.
Could it happen? Maybe, right? Like I said, Kevin Cooey had a good play downs. They, you know, played some good games at the trials.
Yep.
Braden Calvert, sure. Jean-Michel Menard's team has won a lot of games this year. I don't think they've played a lot of good teams, but
they've been hot. They've been hot. Yeah.
So, you know, former world champion.
Yep.
World champion. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it could. I mean, one of the bold predictions for this year was that a provincial champion wins the Brier. So, you know, I think when you look at those teams, probably Quebec and Alberta would be the two I would have an eye on of the two who could potentially do it. But even at that, with Kevin Cooey's team, you have that variable that Tyler Tardy is coming back from the Olympics as well. What condition is he in? I think they've I think they've had a fun week.
I'm sure they've had a fun week. But yeah, that's those are the teams I see that could win, to be honest. The rest of them, I would be pretty surprised if they ended up winning. I wouldn't be that surprised if some, you know, made the playoffs over those top four, but like made the top four.
Sure.
But yeah, I would be pretty surprised if any of the rest won.
All right, well, Scott, let's dive into the teams. Let's start with Pool A, and we will start with Team Canada. We're going to go in the order in which they are ranked by CTRS. So we're starting with Pool A and Team Canada. They are, of course, Brad Jacobs, Mark Kennedy, Brett Gallant, and Ben Hebert. You might have heard the story we broke in the first half of this episode. They did win the gold medal at the 2026 Olympic Games. So the question really for them, or for us about them, is how tired are they? How sort of into this are they going to be? Is it just come out? I mean, I think these guys are way too competitive to just come out and go through the motions. But there's also human nature involved. And what Brad Gushue did 4 years ago is just so mind-blowing to me, to have come back from a bigger time difference than what these guys are coming back to as well. Yeah. And win is remarkable, or was remarkable and remains remarkable. Can they do it? Absolutely. Will they do it? We'll find out.
Yeah. I think that's the only question, right? Is are they able to come back fresh enough to win? They're a great team. We talked about that a lot coming into the Olympics. We saw them win a gold medal. I don't think we need to dwell too much on the rest of it.
All right, well, let's move on to Newfoundland and Labrador. It is Brad Gushue. This is his final time at a Brier. Very fitting that it is in St. John's. This is his 23rd and final appearance at a Brier. He has 5 titles to his name. This team went 8-3 last year, 4-3 at the trials. The last time they played was a couple weeks ago, or about a week and a half ago now, at the Curling Stadium Martinsville event out in Saskatchewan. They lost the semifinal to Jordan McDonald in that event. Jordan McDonald will go on to win the event. Scott, if you look at their results overall on the season, somewhat middling. And since the lineup change where EJ Harnden went out, Brendan Botcher came in, they haven't had the same level of results. And I don't think that's necessarily Brendan Botcher's fault. But this particular construction of the team hasn't seen the same level of success as previous constructions of Brad Gushue's team. But this week is not about Brad Gushue and wins and losses. I know he wants to win. But this is about him getting his flowers from the people of St. John's and all the people who are actually, we know a lot of folks who are going to this event from outside of Newfoundland and Labrador as well. This is going to be a week long thank you and love fest for, and well deserved, mm-hmm. for Brad Gushue, one of the best to ever do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it kind of should be, right?
Yeah.
I imagine the reason that he announced he would stop playing is because the Briar is in St. John's. It's kind of the perfect capper, mm-hmm. To your career. And I know he really wants to win this. Like, he does. So they start pretty soft, right? Pretty soft. We're going to talk about Team Quebec, but they play Team Quebec first. And then Team Nunavut after that should be able to get their feet under them. And I remember last time it was in St. John's, they felt a lot of pressure.
Yeah, they weren't good off the top of that event.
Yeah, yeah. And so I would look for them to have learned from that. Obviously, they've won 4 Briars or 5 Briars or something since. But to be able to park everything external, and really focus on this, I think they'll be able to do it. I said they're one of the 4 teams that can win, and yeah, I'll stand by that.
All right, let's move on to Team Ontario. It is a rookie skip here, a rookie team entirely, actually, of Jaden King. They beat Sam Muybrook 9-6 in the Ontario final to get into this event. It's Jaden King, as I said, along with Dylan Nepage. Owen Henry and Victor Pietrangelo. Victor Pietrangelo has been in the mixed doubles trials last year. He played in that. Dylan at third. He won the 2019 U18 Nationals as a skip. So you do have some national level experience on this team. They also played in the pre-trials earlier or last fall, went 4-3 there, obviously didn't get through to the trials. They're 39-19 on the season, 29% steal efficiency, very effective there in getting points without the hammer. Looking at their schedule, Scott, they start against Nova Scotia and PEI. So if we're looking at them as a potential playoff team and where wins might come from in this pool, kind of feel like they have to be 2-0, which is a bit of a big ask for a rookie team.
I think you're right. Those first two games are going to be pretty important. Sean, their hammer factor from stats I've scraped from Double Takeout at 26.26, 26%. You want to see like the best teams in the world kind of around 0.3 to 0.4. But this is a super, super, super skilled young team. I'm really excited to see their first shot at the Brier stage.
All right, next up, we will go to Saskatchewan and Kelly Knapp. This is Kelly's second Brier appearance as a skip, 4-4 back in 2023. Brennan Jones is back as his third. He was there in 2023, but a new front end for Kelly Knapp, Dustin Kidby, fifth Brier for him, first time back since 2022 with Matt Dunstone, and Matt Ring is throwing the lead stones. It is his debut. They've had a very good season out west, 40-6 on the season with a 65% force efficiency and a 33% steal efficiency. I'm no mathematician, but that doesn't leave a lot of room for the other team getting multiple points. But they are in a much higher caliber field here than a lot of the events that they have played in so far on the season. So see how they adjust to that. But if you look at their schedule, their finish is rather interesting to me in that they end with Nunavut, Newfoundland Labrador, Nathan Young, then Gushu, then Ontario. So if they're in a spot where they're going into those last four games, even if they're 1-3, they still have a chance. 2-2, I think they have a really good chance if they can get through those first four.
Yeah, the first four are going to be the important ones, like you said. And yeah, that game against Gushu could be important for both teams. But you're right, they've had a great season and are near the top of my combined team index rankings. I'll tell you who the top team is later, and it's going to surprise you.
Okay.
But the sample size is an issue there. So he's the second highest in the field that I see other than one with a very low sample size. So great year so far. They could come up and surprise someone.
All right, Scott, let's go to La Belle Province and Team Quebec. It is Felix Asselin. They beat Julien Tremblay 9-4 in the Quebec final. Jean-Michel Menard is skipping the team, throwing the third stones. Felix Asselin is the fourth stone thrower. Martin Crête and Jean-François Trépanier round out the team. It is the 12th and final Brier for Jean-Michel Menard. He has announced that. He is, of course, the 2006 Brier champ and world silver medalist. Martin Crête is back, but Scott, he's not playing third, so we won't get as many GOAT comparisons.
Yeah, the GOAT calls were always fun.
Yeah.
But it's fun to see him out there sweeping with the real red face, you know, sweating hard.
Yeah.
Always good.
Yeah, they've had a really good season, 43-5. They were at the pre-trials, went 4-4 there, which means if you take those games from the pre-trials away, 39-1. Very impressive, racking up the wins out there in the events that they've played in. They start out with Gushu, tough assignment in the first game. Then they get Nathan Young, Saskatchewan, Nova Scotia. So if they could sneak one out there against Gushu, and as everyone's figuring out the ice, you say like you always want to get those top level teams or the top ranked teams first or second game while people are figuring stuff out. sneak one out there against Gushu, and you might have a pretty good path forward, Scott.
You sure might, Sean. And the hammer factor that I talk about, they're the highest in the field at 0.41, which takes your hammer efficiency and subtracts your steel defense from that. And so 0.41, highest in the field. Yeah, they've had a great season. Tied for the highest combined team index.
Wow.
They're outscoring their opponents by 3.2 points per game. Just on a roll. And if we can see them get on a roll here, they've got a tough start with Gushu first and then Newfoundland Young after that. And the crowd's going to be against them. Yeah. But you
talk
know,
about a heel turn. Go 2-0 against those two teams.
If they can make the heel turn, you know, we might be talking about them come the end of the week.
All right, Scott, let's stay on the East Coast and but let's move a little bit south and back to the mainland. Nova Scotia. It is Kendall Thompson. This team beat Owen Purcell 9-7 in the Nova Scotia final. Kendall Thompson is making his debut at a Brier. He won the silver medal in 2019 as a skip at the mixed national championship. Playing third is Stuart Thompson, who is not making his Brier debut. He was the Nova Scotia skip back in 2019, went 3-4 there. Bryce Everest at second. He is also making his debut. On the older side for someone making their debut, Scott, 39 years old, so there's still hope for you and me, potentially, to make it to the Brier. I mean, he's younger than both of us, but not by that much.
Not by that much.
Michael Brophy rounds out the team. He is also making his debut at a Brier, 29 on the season, all on the East Coast, though. And of course, Scott, when East Coast teams come into a Brier and have not played outside the East Coast, the trend tends to be struggling to change the release because generally speaking, East Coast ice is a little straighter, so you want a softer release to get the curl, and you can't have that on the arena ice. So it tends to take a little longer for some of these teams that have played only in the East to catch up to the release and what they need to do to control the curl better at one of these events. So I think that'll be something for this team to keep track of, but you do have Stewart, who has been there before, but when your skip hasn't, it probably will take him a while to figure out exactly where to put the broom in this type of condition.
Yeah, it could be. I think the ice is getting better. That narrative has certainly existed in the past. I think that the ice in the East Coast is getting better and curling clubs are getting a lot better at making ice that's closer to arena conditions. It's never going to be the same, but pretty close. And, you know, like you said, they don't have to travel that far. They're staying on the East Coast. You know, could we see them surprise some people? Sure. Mm-hmm. I put them in the mix for that third playoff spot. Why not?
All right, Scott, let's stay on the East Coast and go back to an island. This one is Prince Edward Island. It is Tyler Smith. He won the A, B, and C level events in the PEI playdowns, gets him back to the Brier for the sixth time. Struggled last year going 1-7, but 5-3 back in 2024. So the talent is there, and tough year last year, but he has the shots. He has demonstrated that he can play with these folks as he did back in 2024. Adam Cox at third, his fifth appearance. Chris Gallant, Edward White on the front end. So Cox and White are the same as last year. The lineup changes with Chris Gallant in the second position. They're 22-11 on the season, and they open up against Brad Jacobs. And again, there's never necessarily a time where you want to play Brad Jacobs if you're looking to, you know, win.
Yeah.
If you had to pick one, though, it's probably the first game.
Might be the first game after a week-long bender, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, why not? Yeah, a good team, this Tyler Smith team. I hope that they have fun. I'm looking at their stats, Sean. I'm calculating a 0.09 hammer factor.
Ooh.
Which is mostly due to the fact that they give up a lot of steals. Mm. So not so great there, but
he must have been talking to Suzanne Burt.
That's it.
Keep rocks in play all the time.
Yeah, they're fun happens. To watch, right?
Make
things a little more interesting. So, yeah.
All right, Scott, the other home team in this field, it is Newfoundland Labrador. Nathan Young beat Simon Perry in the Newfoundland Labrador final. This is his third appearance at a Brier, last time back in 2023, where he went 2-6. Colin Thomas is there at the third position, his second appearance. He was the third for Andrew Simmons back in 2024. And then Nathan Locke and Ben Stringer on the front end have been with Nathan Young in the past, 13-11 on the season, 53% force efficiency. That's a number to keep a bit of an eye on, especially in this field. But the key, I think, for this team, or the thing to keep note of and watch, Monday night, Scott, it will be Brad Gushue against Nathan Young. Nathan Young went as the fifth with Brad Gushue to a couple events, and he's the guy who's kind of emerged here in the last few years as maybe the favorite out of Newfoundland and Labrador. He's young too. I think he's 23, 24 in that range. So I think there's maybe some expectation on him, but you can see him kind of maybe develop into another great player out of Newfoundland and Labrador. And a benefit too, he's got the accent. So, you know, I hope we get some TV time for that.
Yeah, this could be the passing of the torch, right, Sean?
Yeah, that'll be a fun night, like Monday night. Like if you have a week-long pass, you definitely want to go Monday night.
Definitely, definitely. So that'll be really fun. Yeah, let's see what they can do. Don't expect much, but having two Newfoundland teams in the field for a Brier in Newfoundland, nothing wrong with that.
Pretty cool. All right, and rounding out Group A, it is Nunavut. They beat Shane Latimer in the best of five to represent the territory, and the team is Derek Samogalski as skip. It is his 10th appearance at a Brier, a front-end player through the course of his career, but he moved up to the north, not actually, but to play out of Nunavut, and he is skipping a team of Sheldon Wedig, Christian Smitherum, and Justin McDonald. All of them have played in Briars before with different players, and they start with Nathan Young, actually. It's kind of an interesting game in that first draw, because Derek Samogalski, obviously tons of experience. They've all been there before. Are they going to win the event? No. But I think with this lineup, and again, I think this field is, or this is the stronger of the two pools, but I think they can give some folks a game.
I think so too. They're, like you said, starting with Nathan Young and then Brad Gushue right away. So they get two Newfoundland teams right out of the gate. I don't know what the game is that they can win. If they can win that first game, you know, maybe build a little confidence. But this team is not going to win. Hopefully what it will do, though, is inspire some more curlers from Nunavut to get out there and keep playing.
Yeah, I think it was just good that we didn't have an acclaimed team from Nunavut.
Yeah. Yeah, and we had a team, right? We saw in the Scotties a couple of years ago them not even send a team.
So. Yeah. So it's a good step forward.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, so that's Group A. Let's move over to Group B, and we'll start with the highest ranked team there. It is Manitoba Matt Dunstone alongside Colton Lott, EJ Harnden, and Ryan Harnden. This is the silver medal list from last year, also a silver at the trials, 34-20 on the season. Scott, is this the time where Matt Dunstone gets over that hump?
I think so. I think this is the one, Sean. This is their time. They've got a tired Jacobs team, a Gushue team who might, you know, be more focused on the moment than the ice, probably not, but a Mike McEwen team that's quite good but has not had a great year, and a bunch of sort of other contenders that I'll put in the mixed basket behind those four.
Okay.
If I'm the sheriff, I'm thinking this is my event.
Yeah, you kind of have to sort of go in with that mindset, right? Like,
of course,
this is my time.
This is my time. And it could be Hammer Factor. Sean is the second highest in the field, 0.38. You know, that's going to be the difference. Their hammer efficiency is 50%. That's tied for highest in the field. So yeah, and their sample size is large. So I think they should be the favorite going in, especially with Team Jacobs coming off a grueling week. And we'll see how the cards fall.
I do want to note as well that they have Jacob Horgan there as the fifth. Of course, Jacob Horgan was on John Epping's team that did not win Northern Ontario. But I mentioned that just to note that he was the winning skip, Jacob Horgan, of the recently concluded Canadian College Athletic Association Canadian Curling Championships, representing Humber College, with Noah Garner, Matthew Abrams, and Matthew Moretto. That just wrapped up this weekend, so congratulations to them. On the women's side, Red Deer Polytechnic won. Cassidy Blair, Kaylee Sparks, Sophia Bassello, and Regan Cox. So congratulations to all of those teams.
Yeah.
So exciting stuff there. I will just really quickly on the U-Sports side of things, the Calgary Dinos are your national champions. And on the women's side, it was Memorial University from, of course, Newfoundland and Labrador. So on the women's side, Kaylee Locke, Haley Gushu, there you go, Emily Neary, Sataya Penny are the champions there from Memorial. And on the men's side, the Calgary Dinos were represented by Keenan Whipf, Kai McCauley, Ethan Drysdale, and Spencer Else. So there you go.
There you go.
The Collegiate Championship, Scott.
What a great event.
All right, and let's move on to Saskatchewan and Mike McEwen. He is there at his 11th Brier, 7-3 last year for him and his team of Colton Flash, Daniel, and Kevin Marsh. They lost the semifinals at the Trials. Middling season for them so far, 23-25. Had that great run a couple years ago out in Regina. Scott, I think if we're looking at a field where they can maybe replicate that success, go on that type of run again, I think this is it.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're, like you said, having a tough season, but I don't see this field being super, super deep. And Mike McEwen and the rest of the team's experience, to be honest, is probably going to take them a long way. Their hammer factor is pretty low, but I think that's reflective of the kind of season they've had, only 0.21, which is quite a bit below a lot of the other teams in the field. I think it's the fifth or sixth lowest in the field as a whole. But the pedigree's there, and this team has won a lot of games in the past. So I wouldn't put anything past them as it comes to winning. I wouldn't be surprised if they won at the end of the week.
All right, another team that we tapped as potentially being a team to win, and that is Alberta. Kevin Cooey, his 14th appearance at a Brier. He is a four-time Brier winning skip. They beat Johnson Tau in the Alberta final alongside Aaron Slachinski, Tyler Tardy, Olympic gold medalist Tyler Tardy, Carrick Martin, 28-21 on the season. They went 4-4 last year. We've seen, Scott, this quad, Kevin Cooey has not had the results we typically associate with Kevin Cooey, but as you mentioned, really good in the Alberta playdowns. I think this is a good pool for him as well.
Yeah, probably. I think we're going to talk about Braden Calvert's team. I'm pretty high on them, but yeah, the Team Cooey, they've got the pieces there. It's just about putting them together, right? And it seems like they've been able to put together events here and there, or just a few games here and there. The Alberta playdowns, they did play quite well, but yeah, Kevin Cooey can play seniors now, I think. Is that right? Yeah,
I believe so.
So maybe he says, this is it. I'm peacing out. I think of some of the other skips who have hung on, like Glenn Howard hung on for a long time.
Yep.
Was still playing well enough to make it to Breyers, that kind of thing. Same with Kevin Cooey. Not quite at the peak of where they were, but also they're not, you know, falling off a cliff.
Right.
They could surprise some teams. You know, if I saw them in that, in the mix there on Friday, I wouldn't be surprised. But if they went home early, I also wouldn't be surprised. Ever since that, what was it in Kingston where they, as Team Canada came and were really not very good?
I think it was.
Or was it after that?
No, it was after that.
Okay.
It was the year with Jacques.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And yeah, it was just kind of like, what's this?
Yeah, what happened? Yeah.
Kevin Cooey not making the playoffs?
And yeah.
Yeah. So any outcome wouldn't surprise me. I mean, if he did win, I would be a little bit surprised, but he's done it before.
Sure has. Four times.
Yeah. I mean, if we talk about Quebec having a chance to come and make some noise, why not Kevin Cooey?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to Manitoba. Braden Calvert, the aforementioned. They beat Jordan McDonald in the Manitoba final to get here. Braden Calvert, Corey Chambers, Kyle Kurz, and Brendan Bulaka all making their Breyer debut. Braden Calvert, it's surprising to me when I saw that, Scott, that he's making his Breyer debut. He's played in two pre-trials in 2021, 2025. He is the 2015 Canadian and World Junior champion. So kind of surprising to me that he hasn't made it to a Breyer, but Manitoba's really tough to get out of. They've had a really good season, 27-9, and they lost the best two out of three pre-trials final to Jordan McDonald. So they've had a really good year, really good team, but Breyer debuts are hard, Scott. Rookies, it's tough, and it takes a while to get your feet under you and to figure out everything you got to do, the extra things that happen at a Breyer that don't happen at other events. So they're really good for sure. But that's the part of it that I'm more skeptical about.
Yeah. I did this for the Scotty Sean. I did all the stats and I looked and I was like really impressed by Taylor Reese Hansen's team stats. But then you're right, they're first timers on the big national stage. And I'm going to say the same things about Braden Calvert's team. I'm really impressed by their stats. They're outscoring their opponents by more than 3 points a game. Hammer efficiency at 48%. Their hammer factor is 32, so their steel defense is not as high. But a combined team index of 1.3 is the second highest in the field, tied with Jean-Michel Menard. So, yeah, like all this stuff on paper makes me think, hey, this team is one to watch. Mm-hmm. They could have a week like BC did at the Scotties and stumble a bit early, but they showed flashes to me of that underlying skill and talent. And so I think what this team should be aiming for is to get into that Friday mix, and then you never know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. If you can get to that Friday, at least Friday night, mm-hmm. you give it a go.
Yeah, who's their schedule? Do you have that in front of you?
I do not see.
Manitoba, Calvert. They face Cooey in the first draw. Then they've got the Northwest Territories and then UConn. So if they beat Cooey in that first draw, they've got a pretty good path to 3-0.
Yeah.
And Vic will be saying their name with an inflection at the end. come the early part of the week. So one to watch, I think.
All right, Scott, let's move back east and go to New Brunswick. It is Jimmy the Kid, James Gratton, back for his 18th Breyer. Last year went 3-5. He's alongside Joel Kratz, Andy McCann, and Noah Riggs. Similar to last year where they're going with younger players. Andy McCann is 42 at the second position, but Joel Kratz is 24. Noah Riggs is only 21. He is making his debut out of Breyer. He won a silver medal at the 2025 Canadian Juniors. It's the third on Team Dalrymple. So, we saw this last year with James Grant, with James's son playing. He's there as the fifth this year. We'll probably get some time on the ice. For sure, they've had a good season, 32-7, won the Stu Sells Halifax event. Scott, we've always enjoyed seeing James Grattan at these events. He's another guy eligible for seniors at this point. But I really like that he's there as an older player relative to the field and passing on his just immense experience to these younger guys. And I think setting up New Brunswick men's curling really well moving forward.
I think so. Yeah. I think this is really good to see. I like watching James Grattan play. He always kind of mixes it up. You go over to his, the updates that, and there's always stuff going on. He's always got crazy shots to make to score points. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't.
Yep.
But that's the way it goes. They've had a good year. Obviously, to get here, you need to, but I'll be excited to watch them play. I think they can sort of punch with anybody around after those top four. And we'll see how many they can pull out.
All right, let's jump all the way to the West Coast and Team British Columbia. It is Cody Tanaka making his debut at the Breyer, beat Jason Montgomery in the BC final. He's alongside Jared Kolomaya, Mitchell Kopitko, and Coburn Thadden. The entire team is making their debut except for Jared Kolomaya. This is his second appearance. He was the second for Brent Pierce back in 2022. That team went 4-4. This team 20-15 on the season. Scott, BC curling is more your account. You were very positive, as you mentioned, on Taylor Reese Hansen and her debut. How do you feel that Cody Tanaka will do in his debut?
I'm not as high as on them as I was on Taylor Reese Hansen, though it's hard for me to have been higher given that I picked them to win. Really good to see this young team break through. They beat Team Montgomery in the final. Montgomery is a team I played against quite often in Victoria. And they're one of these teams that's really, really, really good and just haven't been able to break through to get out of the province. But Cody Tanaka's team being young, and they came through the B side of the draw to be able to punch their ticket. I'm happy for them to be able to do this. The provincial took place in Esquimalt, where a friend of mine is the city communications manager. And she was telling me all about, the comms they did for the event. It was pretty fun. I don't think I have any expectations for them to come in and win, but they'll get some experience and they could be a team to watch for BC going forward. The depth isn't quite there on the men's side like it is on the women's, I don't think. But that's my sort of analysis of the team.
All right. Well, let's jump back to Ontario and go to the northern part of Ontario, where Dustin Montpellier and Sandy McEwen are Team Northern Ontario. Dustin Montpellier calls the game. Sandy McEwen throws the fourth stones. They are joined by Olivier Bonin-Duchamp and Luc Ouimet. Luc has played in a Breyer before. This is his third time, but first since 2009. He was on Team Mike Jacobo back in 2005 and 2009. So been a minute for him. Everybody else making their debuts. Really cool story when they beat John Epping in the Northern Ontario final. Sandy McEwen's a guy who I'm pretty sure I've never met, but I've seen his name a lot in cash spiels and in the Northern Ontario playdowns. First time making it through. So a really, really cool story there. Kind of in the Trevor Bonneau category of everyone who I saw says he's a nice guy, good guy, and are excited for him to have gotten through and get to a Briar for the first time. I want to note too, Lee Toner, there is the alternate friend of the show. Mm-hmm. So 14 and 12, these guys are on the season. Also have Kira Brunton there as a coach. You might remember her from a couple of Scotties. Interesting start to their schedule, Scott. UConn, New Brunswick, Northwest Territories.
Who could we be hearing the moose calls there at the RE/MAX Center?
Mary Brown Center.
Oh, sorry. I apologize to the chicken. yeah, we could be hearing these moose calls, and that's always fun when the team from Northern Ontario is doing well. I think these guys are going to have an awesome time, and for them to be able to experience this, like, really, like, take it all in and do those up close and personals and sign autographs and stuff. I think that's going to be really cool.
Yeah, really just soak it in, enjoy the experience, have a good time. And I think having Lee there, I mean, Luke has played before, but like having someone who's been there a bunch and like kind of knows the routine of it, I think will help them be like, how cool it is that you get to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. Yeah.
All right, Scott, let's go to the north for our final two teams. We'll start in the west with UConn. Thomas Scoffin making his sixth appearance at the Briar, same team as he had last year in 2025 of Kerr Drummond, Trigg Jensen, and Joe Wallingham. They did go 4-4 last year, so don't sleep on these guys. There is a lot of talent up and down this lineup. This season, they lost the final of the original 16 cash spiel in Calgary in November. That's a good field. That's a good event. So again, these guys are not going to win the 2026 Briar, but if anybody sleepwalks into a game with them, they're going to be surprised.
Yeah. So Sean, I told you there was a surprise for the best statistical team.
It's these guys
going into this event. Granted, the sample size is 10 games and they were 9-1. Outscored their opponents by 5 points a game, 56% hammer efficiency, 79% force efficiency, 50% steal efficiency. These numbers don't have to add up. It makes sense. And 11% steal defense. So they were either their numbers are crazy. Hammer factor 0.45, highest in the field by 0.7 points. And without hammer factor, the only team over one. I take that back. Kelly Knapp's over one. But the highest team, 1.74 combined team index. The next closest is 1.3. They're blowing teams out of the water. Obviously, it's small sample size and the quality of the opponents they've played. They've played nobody inside the top 50 per doubletakeout.com all year. But you can only beat the teams that are in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done a lot of that. So, you know, maybe they're riding the high of these wins. And maybe they'll come up and scare a few teams.
Yeah. The classic question, Scott, do you get good then win, or do you win and then get good?
It's a great question, Sean.
Yeah. And they've been doing some winning again. 4 wins last year at this event. So yeah, don't sleepwalk against this team. All right. And Scott, rounding out the field, it is the Northwest Territories. It is Jamie Cooey making his 18th appearance. Did not qualify last year, so he is back. First time since 2024. Went 5-4 back in 2024 alongside Glenn Kennedy, Roland Robinson, and Shadrick McLeod. Roland Robinson, he's the only changeover from that 2024 team. It is his first time at a Briar. And Scott, if you're heading out to St. John's for this, if you want to meet a player in the patch that isn't in a formal setting of the up close and personal or autograph setting, Jamie Cooey's your guy.
Sure is. King of the patch. And I think so I told you, Sean, I go and pull these stats from doubletakeout.com. This team is the only team that wasn't on there.
Okay.
Does that mean they didn't play at all this year other than the playdowns?
Potentially. Probably. Yeah. They did beat Aaron Bartling in those Northwest Territories playdowns, but potentially that, yeah, they didn't play in any other spiels out there.
Yeah. So this is a team that really comes together for the Brier. They always have fun. And like you said, they had a pretty good showing last time they were there, right? Yeah. 5-4. So that was with when they had pools of,
I think it was this format. It was 2 years ago, which I think was this format.
They might have had a tiebreaker then. Anyway, great, yeah, great fun to watch them play. Watch them, like Jamie Cooey's so good at curling, really. Like, maybe could he have been better than Kevin? Maybe, who knows? But he really likes to have fun out there on the ice, and good to see some younger players. Shadrick getting his first shot, pretty cool. Canada North pilot living up in Yellowknife. So
there you go.
Yeah, I think they'll have fun, and they could definitely beat teams. So like, I think the depth in Pool B here that we've talked about is probably deeper. I think you mentioned Pool A at the start.
I think Pool A is a little deeper. Yeah.
Having talked through them all though, I don't know. I could see the territories, both of them come in and, you know, messing up a few teams' weeks.
All right, so there you have it, Scott. 18 teams that are in the field out in St. John's, and let's do some picks.
Let's do some picks. I'll go first. You've written yours down, I assume, right?
Yeah.
You always do.
I always do, because it's got to be fair. It's got to be even. It's, you know.
I like to pick in the moment, Sean, after we've talked about all the teams, and I really, you know, get a dive in and have the chance to go through the numbers. So we're picking top four and then winner.
Well, let's do pools, top three in the pools and then winner.
Okay.
That's what we did for the Scotties based on what I've written here.
Oh
wait, no, it's not. We just picked podium. Never mind. Just pick your podium.
Yeah. Let's just pick the podium. Let's go Dunstone to win. I picked it already when talking about their team. Dunstone to win. Give me a Gushu runner-up and Mike McEwen third place.
All right. So, Scott, I actually have the exact same final. Same final, different result. I got Gushu going over Dunstone in the final, and I'm going to give the bronze medal to Kevin Cooey and Team Alberta.
Ah, that's a good podium, Sean.
So there you have it. Scott, who'd you have as the bronze?
I had McEwen. Mike McEwen.
Yes, all right.
I think Jacob's hangover is going to be Olympic hangover, not...
That could be a real one. I don't know.
I mean, listen, I'm not going to make any assumptions, but... you know, coming from that high, it's going to be tough. We did see Brad Gushu come back from the Olympics and win, but
it's so hard.
He's Brad Gushu, and
yeah,
that's mean to Brad Jacobs. Brad Jacobs is also
really good,
pretty great. Anyway, I just thought I'd be contrarian.
Yeah, I think it's just really hard to do to come back from that and win. And if he does it, more credit to him. So there you have it. Those are the 18 teams heading to St. John's, Newfoundland, and Labrador. Action kicks off on Friday night. Draw times are going to be 9:30, 2:30, and 7:30 local. Please do remember that Newfoundland has its own time zone, an extra half hour. So that's 8, 1, and 6 Eastern time. That's what you got, and you can figure out the other time zones across the country.
I thought you were going to Brian Williams you know what I mean? Go across.
Brian the Williams it go all the way across the country. Yeah. If we hadn't been here for already an hour and 35 minutes or whatever it is, I would have. On TSN, you can stream it internationally on the TSN YouTube channel. It's geo-blocked in Canada, but you can stream it internationally just on YouTube Live, and then they'll post it afterwards as well. You can watch the afterwards ones in Canada, not live. So if you're around the world and you want to watch it, that's how you can do it. Or if you're in Canada and want to watch it, VPNs are a wonderful thing. So that's how you can watch the 2026 Montana's Breyer. We'll be back with you next week because we got more Olympic stuff to talk about, Scott. The Paralympics are going to be kicking off next week over in Cortina. So we got the wheelchair four-person and mixed doubles events to talk about. So we'll talk about those next week. So if you want to listen to that episode or everything else we got coming up in what is still a very busy spring of curling, please do subscribe wherever you get your podcast, like, rate, comment. All that good stuff helps other people find the show, keeps us growing. Head on over to GameOfStonesPod.com. Past episodes are there, plus a link to the merch. We're on the socials at GameOfStonesPod, GameOfStones Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to let us know what you want to hear on the show, it's GameOfStonesPodcast@gmail.com. So there you have it, Scott. Whoa, that was a loaded episode.
Lots on the go. Do you have any final thoughts on the Olympic quad, Sean? It's 4 years, and with the closing ceremonies, starts a whole new quad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Does this count? Does the end of the season still count as this quad? It's the same teams. We haven't had all the breakups yet, obviously. We've had some, but
yeah, we've had some, and I'm sure some are, you know, going to be announced not too soon after the Breyer.
Yeah.
We've had some of the women's teams already announced there.
Yeah. And then, I mean, just a couple of the men, like John Epping.
Yeah.
He's the most notable one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think about the quad, Scott, I think it's going to be, for me, the lineup changes, the more aggressive lineup changes this quad than we've seen in the past. And I'm curious to see if that carries forward.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably the theme of the quad. You're right.
So,
okay. Yeah. Well, maybe we can take a deeper dive in the summertime.
Yeah. We got a lot of good summer episodes this year.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
My book is full, which I'm very excited about.
Amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, but before we get to that, we got a lot of curling yet to come this spring. So enjoy the Breyer, everybody. As I said, we'll be back next week to talk all about the Paralympic curling, preview another 10 days of curling over in Cortina. So until we talk to you then, keep those brooms on the ice and don't dump that intern.
Make the final.